So, you know, when you sign a commercial lease, your rent is pretty much fixed. Or say you hire a new warehouse manager, that salary is locked in.
Right, exactly.
But if you process credit cards in 2026, your processor can just decide on a random Tuesday to freeze $500,000 of your cash.
Yeah, and there is not a single federal regulator who will step in to stop them.
It is wild. And welcome to this deep dive, by the way. We are formatting this session as an internal working meeting right here at My Pay Advisor. I will be your analyst co-host today, and sitting right across from me is our senior payments advisor.
Glad to be here.
So we are looking at a stack of crucial sources today, specifically targeting operators moving between $25,000 and $5 million a month in card volume.
Yeah, a really critical group.
For sure. We have the 2026 Operator Guide on Negotiating Reserve Terms, Visa's official rules on processing, some Federal Reserve payment systems documentation, and industry data from the Nelson Report.
And you know, as the lead advisor on this project, I want to anchor us immediately in what is actually landing on desks this quarter.
Let's hear it.
The default term sheets we are reviewing right now are coming in hot. We are seeing 5 to 10% rolling reserves and 180-day release
Oh,
windows.
wow. That is a massive chunk of working capital just gone. I mean, it basically vanishes from your cash flow.
It does. And operators often treat that hold like it is just a fixed cost of doing business. But it isn't.
Right.
A processor reserve is a working capital tax. Those default terms are, well, they are nothing more than an opening bid from an underwriter who fully expects you to fight back at the negotiating table.
Okay, let's unpack this because there's just so much confusion around what a reserve actually is. Let me be clear here. A reserve is not a fee.
No, not at all.
It is your money. It is a pool of your settled funds that the acquirer holds back to cover things like chargebacks, refunds, fraud, or ACH reversals,
Yeah.
which, you know, is just industry speak for when an electronic bank transfer bounces.
Exactly. The funds sit on your balance sheet, but you have zero access to them. They sit in a non-interest-bearing FDIC-insured account at a sponsor bank. And if you don't know, think of a sponsor bank as the heavyweight financial institution that sits behind your payment processor. They handle the actual movement of money across the network.
Right, so you can't draw on it to make payroll. You can't pledge it against a line of credit. I sort of like to think of it like a commercial landlord holding a security deposit,
That's a good way to look at it.
but with a massive catch. Imagine giving your landlord that deposit, but the landlord gets to keep all the interest that money earns.
Oh, yeah.
And worse, the required deposit just keeps growing every single time your business makes more sales.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, we really have to look at why these underwriters demand such a massive cushion in the first place.
Okay.
So Visa's official dispute rules state that an acquirer is on the hook for chargebacks for up to 540 days.
Wait, hold on. 540 days. That is almost a year and a half.
Yes. It's wild. If your business shuts down tomorrow, a wave of customer disputes could theoretically arrive a full year from now. So the processor has to pay those refunds out of their own pocket unless they have your reserve funds sitting right there to draw from.
Ah, I see.
They are essentially using your working capital to insure their own risk.
And nobody is policing how much they take. I mean, when we look at the Federal Reserve payment systems documentation, the Fed oversees the broad payment infrastructure. They manage regulation too, which caps the fees processors can charge for debit card swipes. They manage regulation CC for how fast bank checks have to clear. But they do not regulate reserve sizing.
No, they don't. It is a complete regulatory void. The decision on how much of your cash to freeze is left entirely to the acquirer's own internal risk team.
Wow.
You could have two e-commerce merchants selling the exact same product with the exact same processing volume, and they can end up with reserves that differ by hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Just because different risk analysts reviewed their files.
Exactly, just based on the analyst.
That is insane. The contract governs everything, not the card brands and not the government. So, if the underwriters have total control over the math, how do they actually build these traps into the agreements?
Well, in the 2026 landscape, we see three primary reserve structures. And knowing the difference is basically how you prevent a mild cash flow drag from turning into a business-ending crisis.
Okay, let's break those down. The most common one is the rolling reserve, right?
Right.
So the processor takes a fixed percentage out of every single daily settlement batch, and they hold it for a defined window. Like, if you sign a 10% rolling reserve with a 180-day release, the money they take on January 1st doesn't hit your bank account until July.
Which means, at a steady state of sales, The processor is holding roughly 2 full months of your gross volume hostage at any given moment.
Right. And then the second structure is the upfront capped reserve.
Yes.
This one hurts immediately, but ends quickly. They withhold 100% of your daily payouts until they hit a specific dollar target.
Right. So say the cap is $50,000 and you process $200,000 a month. They just keep every single dime for the first week.
Wow.
Yeah. But once they hit 50 grand, your settlements return to normal.
Okay. And then you have the hybrid model, which is a minimum upfront reserve combined with a rolling reserve.
Yeah. That one is tough.
They build an immediate cash floor and then keep skimming a percentage off the top forever.
We see that hybrid model heavily in high-risk verticals. You know, things like dietary supplements, travel booking, subscription boxes. The underwriter just wants an immediate buffer and ongoing protection.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let me stop you right there for a second.
Sure.
If I am an operator scaling a healthy business, isn't a standard 10% rolling reserve just, I don't know, a simple math problem?
How do you mean?
Well, I know my margins. Yeah. I can model that 10% out in Excel before I even sign the contract. So why are the sources calling this a compounding trap?
Well, what is really fascinating here is how that math behaves in reality. The operator guide calls this pattern one. Let's look at a standard growth curve. A 10% rolling reserve at $100,000 in monthly volume holds $60,000 of your cash over a six-month window.
Right. And most operators look at that and say they can stomach it. Sure, 60 grand is annoying, but, you know, you plan for it.
Exactly. But then you have a massive fourth quarter. You scale up to $500,000 in monthly volume.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, that exact same contract clause is now freezing $300,000 of your working capital. Your own growth is literally funding the processor's risk position.
You are literally being penalized for being successful.
Well, you have to factor in the cost of capital, too.
Right.
If your business borrows money at a 10% interest rate, having $300,000 frozen by your payment vendor is costing you $30,000 a year in foregone cash.
That is cash you could have used for inventory. You could have hired new staff.
Exactly.
But scaling your volume isn't the only thing that can blow up your balance sheet, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sources show us that the fine print is full of hidden triggers.
Oh, totally.
They can freeze your cash instantly, even if your volume stays perfectly flat.
Yes. The operator guide outlines these specific contract landmines, and they are incredibly common in default agreements.
Let's look at pattern two, the Tuesday morning surprise.
Mm-hmm.
This is formally called the unilateral adjustment clause.
Mm.
The standard language says the processor can raise your reserve percentage at any time in their sole discretion with just 30 days of written notice.
Right.
So you think you are locked in at 5%, and then you get a form email saying they're jumping it to 15% next month.
And we know exactly what triggers that email. Processors usually pull the unilateral adjustment lever when a merchant's chargeback ratio crosses 0.65%.
That is a very specific number. Why 0.65?
It is the Visa Acquirer Monitoring Program threshold. It is commonly known as VAMP.
Okay, VAMP.
Right. Once your chargebacks hit 0.65%, Visa starts looking very closely at your processor.
Also, the acquirer gets nervous about getting fined.
Exactly. And they pass that anxiety directly onto your balance sheet by jacking up your reserve.
So they just pass the buck. But it gets even more diabolical with pattern three, the resetting clock.
Yeah. This clause destroys businesses.
Normal contracts state the release window is 180 days from the date of the original transaction. So you swipe a card today, you get that specific reserve piece back in 6 months.
Right.
But some contracts explicitly state the release window is 180 days from the last transaction in the account.
Think about what that actually means in practice.
I mean, if you are a successful operating business that processes new sales every single day, the clock resets every single day.
Yes.
Wait, so because you are making sales every day, you are penalized by the clock resetting.
Mm.
That is insane.
It really is.
The oldest reserves never actually release.
Mm.
Your held balance just grows to a maximum peak and sits there permanently.
Mm-hmm.
Until you basically shut down the business and stop processing entirely.
Which leads us perfectly into pattern four. The post-termination hold.
Oh, right.
This is the ultimate trap for an operator trying to negotiate.
Because standard termination language gives the acquirer 270 days to hold your funds after you leave.
Exactly. 270 days. Let's put that into context with the industry data we have.
From the Nilson report, right?
Yes. The Nilson report, published by David Robertson, tracks global card industry metrics. And they are reporting a massive surge in new transaction volume right now.
Because Visa and MasterCard are expanding merchant acceptance categories, right?
Yes. So more operators are moving more money than ever before.
Okay, so let's say an operator is moving $1 million a month. They realize their current processing rates are terrible, so they find a new vendor to save money.
They try to switch, but they have a 10% rolling reserve with their current processor.
Right.
If they terminate that contract, the old processor just invokes that 270-day hold. That operator suddenly has $600,000 completely frozen for 9 straight months after the relationship ends.
Just because they tried to find a better vendor? I mean, that is practically extortion.
It feels like it.
They would literally need to go out and secure a bridge loan just to make payroll while they wait for their old processor to slowly drip their own money back to them.
Yeah, the entire system is built to create incredible friction. The house sets the rules to make leaving as painful as possible.
So if the contract is rigged and the house always wins, how did anyone actually survive this? I know we have a specific case study from 2026 detailing how a merchant beat the math.
We do, and it proves that you totally can negotiate this if you just know what buttons to push.
Well, here is where it gets really interesting. We're looking at a 13-month-old direct-to-consumer skincare brand.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have retail stores, they just ship products. They're processing $850,000 a month. Their average ticket is $68.
Okay.
But the crucial metric here is their chargeback ratio. Over the trailing 6 months, they are sitting at a very clean 0.41%.
See, that 0.41% is their ultimate advantage. They are well below that 0.65% vis-a-vis AMP threshold we talked about earlier.
Right, so they're a low risk to the processor.
Exactly, but their contract didn't reflect that at all. Their default agreement had them locked into a 10% rolling reserve with a 180-day release window.
So at $850,000 a month in volume, a 6-month hold means the processor was sitting on over $500,000 of this brand's working capital.
That is a staggering amount of frozen cash for a young brand.
So what was the exact counterplay? How did the operator fix it?
Well, first, they ignored their sales rep. Complaining gets you nowhere.
Right.
Instead, they went straight to the market and secured a hard competing term sheet from a different acquirer. This new offer proposed a 7% rolling reserve with a 120-day release window.
Wow. Just getting that new sheet completely changes the scale of the problem. Dropping from 10% down to 7%,
right,
and shrinking the hold from 6 months to 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
That takes that $500,000 burden and cuts it down to about $238,000.
And they proved they were willing to walk away. They took that new term sheet directly back to the risk underwriting team at their incumbent processor.
And the incumbent folded. They countered with an 8% rolling reserve over 150 days.
But here's the genius move. The operator didn't just accept that. They demanded a written step-down schedule.
Okay, what does that mean?
The incumbent agreed in writing that if the skincare brand kept their chargebacks under control for 12 more months, the reserve would automatically drop to 5% over 90 days.
Oh, wow. Look at the final impact of that negotiation. Fast forward a year. A 5% reserve over a 3-month release window means the processor is only holding about $128,000.
Exactly. They took a $510,000 cash hostage situation and shaved off almost $400,000.
That is nearly $400,000 that went straight back to buying inventory and hiring staff, and they did it without ever changing processors or dealing with that ridiculous 270-day termination hold.
Right. It is the perfect example of operator confidence. These terms are totally flexible, but underwriters will only budge if you force the issue with clean data and legitimate market alternative.
So what does this all mean for the person listening right now? We need an action plan. If you are an operator running a $3 million a month business, what are you doing this week?
First, stop ignoring the fine print. Pull your latest processing statement today. Find the specific line item for your reserve balance.
You have to know the actual number.
You need to know exactly how much of your cash they are holding right now. Then, pull your trailing 12 months of chargeback data and calculate your ratio.
And if they confirm, they're under that 0.65% Visa threshold.
Then you have the power. Go get two competing term sheets from outside acquirers. Get them in writing. And when you review them, ignore the swipe fees for a minute.
Right.
Ask specifically for their proposed reserve percentage, the release timeline, and their unilateral adjustment language.
And when they take those sheets back to their current vendor, what is the specific demand?
Push to convert your rolling reserve into a capped upfront reserve. A capped reserve stops growing.
Yeah, that is huge.
If you plan to scale your sales this year, capping that reserve is the single largest working capital win you can secure.
And they have to fix that termination trap too.
Oh, definitely. You must demand the 270-day post-termination hold be reduced to 90 or 180 days max. Get it in the schedule.
Don't take a verbal promise.
Never. Don't let a sales rep tell you that you will take care of it later. Sales reps don't control risk teams. If it's not printed in the contract you sign, it doesn't exist.
That brings up a final thought I really want to leave everyone with today. We talked earlier about how the processor holds your cash in a non-interest-bearing account.
Mm-hmm.
But the sponsor bank is definitely earning interest on that massive pool of capital.
Oh, they are earning a massive yield on your money.
Right. So in our current high interest rate environment where that float is incredibly lucrative, you have to ask yourself a dark question.
I agree.
Are these processors secretly incentivized to keep your business categorized as high risk? When are they enforcing these massive reserves, not because of actual chargeback danger, but simply because they want free access to your capital?
It is a phenomenal question. I mean, if they are generating pure profit off your frozen funds, they have zero internal motivation to ever volunteer a reduction. The system is just designed to keep your money quiet and profitable for them. You have to be the one to break the pattern.
You really have to force their hand.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that wraps up this strategy session. Check your contracts, pull those statements, and keep fighting for your cash flow. We will see you next time.